Everybody, we're going to go ahead and get started. Good afternoon to most of you all. I'm Sierra Royster. I'm April's Youth Program Coordinator. I want to thank everybody for joining us today for the April's Youth Advocacy Committee training. This is part two of the Fair Housing Act Youth Training. So we're hoping that this training will help young individuals looking for a transition on learning a little bit more about their rights and responsibilities, and much more when entering in just the independent living arena and field and those types of things. So if you are staff, how you can also take these tools and work with the youth that you have in your center. So hopefully this will be a learn for everybody. This training is sponsored by the Research and Training Center on Independent Living at the University of Kansas. So we thank them so much for the support for this and their continued support for all of our youth. They do a lot for us, so we thank them for that. Now, today's call will be a webinar system, so you can follow along with the PowerPoint materials that were sent to you with the call-in information, or you can be online, of course. Please know that there are going to be questions for today, so we encourage everybody, if you can, jump online to be able to answer those in the chat box a little later. If you run into any issues with using the platform or hearing or any of those kind of things, please just let me know. You can do that by dropping in the chat box, or you can also email me. I'll put in my email in just a second if you have trouble with that. There is CART provided for today. So if you go, if you're online, if you go to the bottom of your screen, if you scroll over the bottom, there will be a toolbar that pops up. And in that toolbar, you'll see a CC button. That CC button is the closed captioning. So it just does little blurbs, so you may not be familiar with that. I did also put the stream text link in the original email, and I can also drop that in for everybody as well in the chat box in a minute if that's something that people would prefer. So that is available for you as well. If you have downloaded the latest version of Zoom, you will be able to join us via microphone. If you still have the older version, it won't let you use your microphone. So going forward, just think about that if it doesn't work today. But if so, you can also join us by phone at the same time. And if you join us by phone, you can press star 6 to mute and unmute yourselves. I have everybody right now. I haven't allowed to talk yet, like I'm the principal or something. But I will click that in a minute, and then you can join into the conversation once we get started. If you are online, if you go to the bottom of your screen to the left-hand side in that same toolbar, if you scroll over it, it'll pop up. There's a microphone at the bottom left. If you click that one time, it will mute you. Another time, it will unmute you. If you notice that you tried to unmute yourself and then you find yourself muted again, I might have done that on our ends if there is some feedback or some background noise that we're trying to pick, or that our system's picking up. We want to make sure it's a clear sound for everybody and that we can hear the presentation. So if you do decide to join into the conversation, we encourage you to do that. But just remember to keep the background noise down. That helps everybody else hear what's being said. And again, please jump into the conversation and whatever makes sense for you. We do have the chat box as well if that's something you're comfortable with. Today's call or webinar meeting is the audio. It is going to be audio recorded, and there will be a transcript for today's call. So those will all be provided, as you might have seen this time, the last week's call was provided in this week's information as well, and you'll continue to see those added in. But at the end of these trainings, these five trainings, you will find them on our website that you can always go back and reference as well. So without further delay, let me turn it over to Don Dew and Dylan Richardson. They're going to be our guide for the next 4 weeks now, because we're already 1 week in. So thank you all for joining us. I'm going to kick it over to you all.
All right. Wonderful. Host has disabled screen sharing.
I got it now. Do it now. You were quick. Too quick for me.
Okay. Safari. Share. And okay, I think we got it. Welcome, everyone. For those of you who did not attend last week, my name is Dylan Richardson. I am an individual and community advocate who lives in Seattle, Washington. We're with communities of people with disabilities for 7 years and have been teaching related to advocacy rights and housing rights for the past 3 years. I'm very excited for today's presentation. We're going to be talking a little bit about the relationship between tenant and landlord, which, like it or not, is it's a very important relationship for people who rent their housing, whether you have a cordial relationship with your landlord or whether can sometimes have some prickly interactions. It's still really important to talk about as far as responsibilities, because each person in this relationship has different responsibilities, as well as rights, things that you're allowed to do that the other party cannot take away from you. And so we want to go over that a little bit. And to start us off, Don is just going to review some definitions we covered from last time.
Right. Thanks, Dylan. And thank you for taking an hour out of your time. Again, my name is Don Du, and I am an executive director at Disabilities Resource Center in Sioux City. I've been working with Fair Housing for probably about 10 years. So it's kind of a passion for me. So some of these terms, of course, you will know, but if you don't, that's not a problem. Landlord, of course, is a person who rents a building, apartment, or other land. So that's the person that you are paying your rent to, and he's usually the person that you will be in contact with a lot, whether it's the landlord, apartment manager, whomever. Now you yourself would be a tenant, and I can't actually move the PowerPoint. There we go. Sorry. A tenant then is a person who lives on the land or property owned by the landlord. So that's where we have landlord tenant and why it's called landlord tenant. Basic terms, but terms that are necessary to know. The security deposit, a lot of people don't understand sometimes what that is, but it's that initial amount of money that you'll give to your landlord to ensure that the rest of the rent will be paid. You know, a lot of times it's the amount of the first month's rent. And that makes sure that you will get that back in the end if you end up abiding by the lease. The landlord will keep that until you end up leaving, you know, at the end of the lease, or subsequently if you end up getting evicted, however you end up leaving that property. But they will end up checking how the apartment or house is compared to when you moved into it. That's why it's always good to make sure you take pictures, videos, whatever, of how the apartment or house was when you first moved in there. If you leave the apartment worse, like there are some pictures here of holes in the walls, trash all over, in a living room or in a bathroom, they'll take money out of that deposit just to recoup some of the loss of cleaning or repairing any of the apartment that they need to. If you take care of the apartment and they don't have to fix anything, they will give that security deposit back, although, you know, they have 30 days to within 30 days, they have to give that back to you. Landlords sometimes, in my experience, have to be nudged sometimes to give that back. Sometimes it takes having an advocate go with you or write a letter to make sure that they know it is within the law that they have to give that back within 30 days.
Yes, and this is why Don suggests taking a video or pictures before you move into that apartment, so that you can verify when you leave if the landlord says, well, I had to pay to have the carpets cleaned after you left the apartment. If you could show the picture saying, no, this stain was already in the apartment before I moved in, that I'm not responsible for this stain, then they won't take the money out of the security deposit and you'll get that deposit back. And again, the reason we talk about this is because landlords often don't like to do this. We talk about these rights because even though they exist, even though this is the law, a lot of times landlords aren't often very willing and upfront about all of the rights that their tenants have, and will try to find ways to skirt around rules if possible. So make sure that you have your own documentation of what the apartment looked like so that you can verify, this is the damage I did, this is the damage I'm responsible for, and this is what I will pay for. And anything else, that's your own, that's the landlord's responsibility. And speaking of which, landlord responsibilities. The landlord, I think, holds the bulk of the responsibility in the relationship between the landlord and the tenant. I mean, obviously, the tenant is agreeing to pay the rent, pay money to use that space, but then in turn, the landlord is saying, I'm planning to maintain this property, make sure that it is safe for you to live in. And the basis of this relationship, where it spells out everyone's responsibilities, is in this lease. I know we're going to come back to this slide over and over and over again in these presentations, and it's because it's really that important. Your lease is the basis of this relationship. It's a legal contract. You are signing your name to it, and you're agreeing to everything that's inside of it. So it's really integral. It's so important that you make sure you know what your lease says and what your responsibilities will be, what your landlord will take on as far as their responsibilities. There are certain things that your landlord has to do. One of them is giving you notice before coming into your apartment. Your landlord can't stop by for a surprise inspection. If they want to come and check your water heater, if they want to come in with a service person to come and see if the electricity is working, they have to give you at least 24 hours notice before they do that. And that notice has to come through whatever official communication means is listed in your lease. So if it says in your lease, we're going to communicate via mail, then it has to be an envelope and a letter dropped into your mailbox 24 hours before they come to your apartment. Or if officially you communicate via email or via an online platform, then that's where they'll send that that notice to. I just saw that we had a question in the chat box. Are we going to cover rent increases at a lease renewal? Yes. Yes, we can cover that. We'll talk about lease renewals towards the end. And your landlord has the responsibility to maintain what we call the habitability of your apartment. And that means maintaining an environment that's safe, that's clean, and where that a human can live in without being at risk of hazard, really. And there are several different areas of habitability that we're going to talk about that fall into this under the law. Things that the landlord has to take care of, or they could suffer legal consequences. The first of those is electrical systems. So anytime there is a malfunction with electricity, if one of the breakers isn't working for whatever reason, that's the responsibility of the landlord. Simply because it's complicated, and if you try to fix a problem without the correct training or knowledge, then you could really injure yourself. And so mostly for the safety of tenants, any electrical problem, you should refer to the landlord and they will have a system for taking care of those issues. In addition, plumbing systems is something that falls under the purview of the landlord. They have a responsibility to maintain working toilet, shower, and sinks in both the bathroom and the kitchen. And if those are not working for whatever reason, that is the landlord's responsibility. They also legally have to maintain the heating systems within your apartment. It's just heating. Air conditioning is not legally required. Landlords do not have to provide air conditioning. It's kind of a perk if you do have it, but it is necessary to maintain the heating system just because, again, that's a health risk. If it's winter and your heat is out, that could be a significant risk to the person who's living in that place. And finally, the last issue that comes under habitability is hot and cold water. So these are the four areas in which pretty much always, if you call the landlord with an issue, it's their responsibility to fix it. And according to the law, they have to fix that issue within 3 days, right? Because this is a major issue. If your electricity isn't working, if your hot water isn't working, that's major and it needs to be resolved quickly. Most other issues, they have to be resolved within 10 days. So the landlord has a little bit more leeway, but for any habitability related issue, 3 days is the limit. In addition, landlords are responsible to take care of garbage removal in any housing structure with two or more units. So if you're a single family who's renting a single family home, it's your responsibility to make sure that you have garbage service, to get in touch with the waste removal companies and make sure that you have a contract with them, that you have a bin where that they will come collect your garbage from. But if you live in a duplex or if you live in an apartment building where there is at least two units, then that's the landlord's responsibility. They should be in communication with those companies, and either a dumpster or curbside bins should be accessible to you without any work on your end.
And Dylan, there was one question that came in about what about extreme hot climates and require an AC being a requirement?
That is a good question. My understanding is that even if you live in Arizona, landlords are not required to provide air conditioning. I might be wrong. Don, do you have any insight on that?
So what I understand, like from Arizona, most of the units do have air conditioning. So, or if it does have air conditioning, then it would be the landlord's responsibility to have that fixed. If it doesn't have air conditioning, they're not required to put that in.
Yeah, so I think in hot climates, air conditioning units are more common in apartments just because of the climate, but it's still not legally required for a landlord to provide air conditioning even in the desert. Good question. Okay, fun topic to talk about. We're going to cover some pests and infestations. So you can see on the screen some images of some common household pets. We've got a mouse, some ants, termites, bed bugs, silverfish. These are things that aren't really fun to think about, but, you know, living as humans in our society, these are pretty common, and more people than you would imagine have had to deal with these sorts of animals and insects living in their house. And in general, when you are renting a house or renting an apartment, it's the landlord's responsibility to maintain a home that's free from pests. Because that is a part of maintaining the habitability and a safe environment in the home, is making sure that there aren't going to be termites that affect the structural integrity of the home, making it unsafe to live in, making sure there aren't vermin, like cockroaches or rats that could affect them, could potentially transmit disease. These are all health risks. And so because of that, it's generally the landlord's responsibility to take care of any of those infestations. However, if a landlord can prove that an infestation, that a tenant comes to them and says, I have cockroaches, I want you to pay for an exterminator to come take the cockroaches out. If the landlord can prove that there weren't cockroaches in there before you moved in and that the cockroaches came because you never cleaned your kitchen, there was food laying around, there was lots of waste matter accumulating around the house, then that the tenant may be responsible for payment and for hiring the exterminator to come and fix that. However, the laws are different in each state, and each state has different guidelines for pest control. So again, I would refer to your lease and see what it says in your lease. In general, I know in Washington, where I live right now, things are, they tend to err on the side of the tenant, and the landlord is in general responsible for taking care of major infestations, but things like ants, you know, that's not really a health crisis. It's unpleasant. Nobody really likes ants in their house, but a lot of the time a landlord won't pay for ant pest removal because no one's health is at risk. So again, work for your lease.
There is a question that says, I live in IL, or Illinois, I'm assuming, and one of my consumers has it written in his lease that he can only have bed bug treatment once, otherwise he is subject to pay or be evicted. Is this legal?
Huh.
I see Don over there nodding.
But Don is nodding, so.
So, in Iowa, we have basically the same thing. And because bed bug infestation is so bad, they have just let that be kind of a battle that keeps on going in between landlord and tenant in the courts, because it has not been settled in the tenant's favor. So most of the leases say that that it can be treated once. If bed bugs are found, you either have to pay it yourself, or you have to take everything out of the apartment or house, and it has to be like totally cleaned with, I don't even know what the stuff is that they clean it with. And then they have to have the inspectors come, like, in my city, they have the city inspector come and make sure it hasn't moved to other adjoining apartments, or you'll have to pay for those too. So they're very strict here anyway.
Yeah. See, and in Washington, where I currently live, I was working with a client who had bed bugs, and we were working with the apartment to get it treated, and the apartment building was willing to cover the cost of all of it. And yeah, they were willing to even treat multiple times. So it really varies based on where you live. And again, check your lease, because that's important to know. If you only have one shot at it, you really want to make sure that you're doing it effectively. Okay, yes. So, oh, what was that, Don?
Oh, nothing.
So, pests and infestations, that's good. And one of the ways that you can try to avoid pests as much as possible, it's not always possible to avoid pests, but one thing you can do is to keep your house clean and sanitary. And that's one of the major responsibilities of being a tenant. You're using this space. There's an assumption that you're going to leave at a certain point. And when you leave, the apartment or the house should be in the same or similar condition to when you moved in. So it's important to make sure that you're regularly cleaning the surfaces, the floors, the counters, the appliances, and making sure that you take care of the apartment that you live in and maintain a sanitary living space. Oh, Don, I'm taking your slides, aren't I? If you want to talk about these, you can.
That's okay. So make sure you dispose the garbage and other waste. There is a picture here, which you do see sometimes in more urban areas, piles of garbage and several feet high in front of a house. Don't let your house look like that. A landlord will not like that. So as a tenant, one of your responsibilities is to dispose of it, but don't wait until it gets that bad.
Yes. And your landlord is responsible for providing the receptacle, but it's your responsibility to make sure the garbage ends up there. Your landlord's not going to come take your trash out for you.
Right. And also, make sure you use appliances in a reasonable manner. This picture shows, you know, smoke coming out of an oven, a freezer that's just open with things dripping, a washer and dryer with soap coming out. If you if you misuse appliances that are part of your apartment or your house, that can be held back on you, like your security deposit. You know, you've paid that to make sure that you will be returning the apartment or house in the same condition. If you misuse appliances or in the case of like the stove, I mean, that's a danger. I mean, you can't have something like that, especially if you have other people in other apartments. You have to be respectful of, you know, their lives also. And the best thing is to be current on all rent payments, whether you have your bank automatically draft it to the landlord, whether you go and take it to the landlord, whatever you do to make sure that you don't get behind on rent. Landlords love people who pay their rent on time all the time. Then you're the perfect tenant that way. And always, always, always follow the rules of your rental agreement. So here again, we're saying read your lease. We're going to just say that and say that because that is the rule to live by.
Yeah. And it's because every lease is very different. And there could be rules that are specific to your lease that no other lease contains. There could be rules about guests. If someone is going to spend the night for more than 3 days, you may need to alert your landlord. They may have rules about noise. You can't have parties past 10 p.m. And there could be consequences for failing to comply with those rules. So the only way to find out what those rules are, what is specific to your apartment, is to go through that lease. So just read it, get someone to help you read it, understand it, write the rules down and post them on the wall so your guests know them, because at the end of the day, you're the one responsible if your name is on that lease.
Yeah.
Oh, didn't look at that. Okay. So does anyone have any questions before we move on to a small activity? If you've got some questions, please feel free to go and add them to the chat box. Or if you can, if Sierra has not muted everyone, you could go ahead and unmute yourself.
So, and remember, if you're online, if you go to the bottom of your screen, you can select the mute, the microphone image, and that will mute or unmute you. If you are on the phone, you can press *6. It doesn't look like you have any questions.
So, we are going to, I'm going to read some scenarios, and if you could, at the end of each scenario, if you could go to the chat box and tell us if you think, I'm going to talk about a potential problem, an issue that could come up in an apartment. Tell us if you think the tenant is responsible for fixing the problem or if the landlord is responsible for fixing it based on what we have talked about so far. So for the first one, it says you wake up, and your apartment is freezing. You check the thermostat and it's set for 70 degrees, but it's 58. The heat doesn't turn on when you turn up the temperature. What do you do? Is this your problem or is this the landlord's problem?
Looks like we're getting a lot of landlords.
Well, I'd have to say landlords, absolutely. Remember, we said that heating is a habitability issue. It is the landlord's responsibility to make sure that you have heat in your apartment. It's unsafe to have an apartment that's consistently below 60 degrees, can cause some health problems. So that would be the landlord's responsibility. Great. Next one. You invite some friends over to play Mario Kart. One of your friends loses, then he gets upset and throws his controller. Puts a hole in your living room wall. Who's responsible for fixing that? Tenant or landlord? Yeah, looks like everyone's saying tenant. Yep, of course, right? That's any guest that comes into your apartment, right, that's your responsibility. Anyone who comes into that space, you are taking responsibility for anything that they might do. So even though you weren't the one who put the hole in the wall, it's still someone that you invited in there. It's going to be your responsibility to take care of it. And that could, that most likely would mean hiring a professional to come and fix that, because I doubt most people wouldn't know how to fix a drywall hole. Landlord will want to, yes, and it's a very good point, Joanna. It's very possible that the landlord will want to have, has a specific contractor that they will want to come in. So you should notify the landlord, let them know there's an issue, and then they will essentially send you a bill to cover it.
So just a question about that then. Would a tenant, they would have to report it that this has happened, and then they would have to follow the suit at that point from the landlord? Or can they just go ahead and fix it if they know there's a hole in their wall? Or is that frowned upon?
Don, it looks like you want to say something.
Well, I was going to say, you know, if they know how to fix it, actually know how to fix it, they could. But I think it's always good to be transparent with your landlord. And just say, you know, there's a hole. I know that I'll have to pay to have it fixed. But I wanted you to know and see what they suggest.
Yes. Yeah, but most often, especially if the landlord owns that property, they like to know who's coming in and out. They like to know the people who are providing service and repairing this place that they own. And typically they have someone that they, who already knows the property, someone whose services that they trust. So again, transparency is usually a good idea. But if you've got the skills, if you can drywall it yourself, more power to you. Okay, scenario three. You decide you want to make some pasta for dinner. You go to start your stove, but the burner won't turn on. Worked yesterday when you tried to use it. Don't know what's going on. Who's responsible, landlord or tenant? See, one seems to be a little tougher. People are taking a little longer to respond. Okay, but still mostly landlord. Yes, I would say this would be a landlord responsibility. Because the tenants did not, there was no overt action from the tenant that damaged the stove. There's no discernible reason why it isn't working. Since the appliance comes with the apartment, that would be the landlord's responsibility. Oh, what if your fridge is starting to smell kind of funky? There's some vegetables in the back that are getting fuzzy, and a couple of takeout containers that you don't remember anymore. Oh, you guys are good. Everyone's saying tenant. Yep. This is a part of the cleanliness, right? The landlord has to maintain the habitability, make sure it's that the house itself is livable, but it's your responsibility to take care of anything that you bring into that apartment. If you have brought food into your apartment and put it in your fridge, that's your responsibility, and you would have to take care of that. It is important to keep things clean, yes, whoever commented that. It's one of your responsibilities, because and the way I look at it, you're going to have to clean it eventually when you move out. You may as well just clean it regularly so you never have to deal with this disgusting mess of a refrigerator we have a picture of on our slide with lots of old leaky condiments and congealed things that no one wants to have to touch anyways. So just keep up with it. And our last scenario. The water in your bathtub is taking forever to drain after you shower. You have long hair, and it all goes down your shower drain. You don't have any drain, anything to catch it. So all of your hair just goes down that drain, and it's taking longer and longer to drain when you finish taking a shower. Who's responsible for fixing this problem?
While everybody's answering, I will say there should have been a warning at the beginning of this presentation
for the
images collected.
Yeah. I thought about it. Some pretty gruesome ones. Tenant used Drano was Meredith. Landlord can get it looked at, but if the clog could be responsible for the clog, landlord slash tenant. Yeah, so this is a confusing one. I put this in here because it's a little less clear. Because we said that the landlord is responsible for maintaining the plumbing, but at the same time, their tenant is partially responsible. They weren't stopping the hair from going down the drain, and it could have resulted in a clog. So I would say that the tenant should notify the landlord, and depending on if they find a clog, they may have to pay for it. So the landlord will probably manage it, take care of the problem, but it might be at the expense of the landlord, of the tenant, excuse me. Don, do you have anything to add?
I would say definitely use a hair trap from then on, because that's something you don't want to see.
Absolutely. That's another one of those where it's ultimately the landlord's responsibility, but the tenant has a lot of small things that they can do to try to avoid larger issues. Right? And this is an issue that I'm particularly familiar with, someone with long hair. A plastic snake will clear the drain, and a screen can stop the hair from building up. Yes, Teresa, great suggestions. Right? It's thinking proactively, trying to anticipate what problems are going to happen and take care of them before they even come up. That's going to help solve a lot of conflict with your landlord. Great suggestion. All right. Well, moving on, we're going to talk about some of the rights that tenants have within the use of their apartments. Because while you're renting that apartment, you do have rights over the use of the space. It belongs to the landlord. The landlord still owns it, but you get to use it as you see fit. And before you even move into that apartment, you have the right to see that the specific place where you are going to live. A lot of times, larger complexes will do kind of a bait and switch where they show you a really, really nice unit with brand new furniture, it's never been lived in, and it's spotless. But then that's just the model unit. The unit you actually get the keys to maybe doesn't look as nice. Maybe there's scuffs on the floor, the appliances are older. There may be some more other issues with it. So if you can ask your landlord when you're touring that apartment, you can say, is this the unit I'm going to be renting? And if not, I want to see that unit. I want a tour of that unit before I sign anything. You have that right, and your landlord cannot deny you a tour of the apartment you are going to be living in. And you also have the right to reasonable privacy within your unit. Accompanying this on screen, we've got an illustration of a person who's in a robe and slippers sitting in their easy chair in their house, but their walls are transparent. And we've got someone with a camera taking a photo, a young boy peeking up, leaning up against the wall, some people pointing. And so, like we said, your landlord has to give you at least 24 hours notice before they enter your apartment. And even while they're in your apartment, you still have the right to privacy within your unit. Your landlord cannot come in and rifle through your things. They can't search through your possessions. If they're there, it has to be for a specific purpose. And they cannot go and do anything outside of that purpose. You also have the right to accessibility within the entire process of renting that apartment. So if you need a large print lease, if you need a version of your lease that's in Braille so that you can read it, if you need a American Sign Language interpretation during your meetings with your landlord, these are all things that you have the right to and that that you should be afforded. And your landlord cannot deny you access to these. Unfortunately, a lot of the times for smaller landlords who are maybe leasing individual properties, they may not have access to a Braille machine. They may not know where to go in order to find those things. So it can be difficult. This is a right that I think is difficult to assert at times just because of some of the burden that it does place upon the landlord. But it is still a right that you have. Do you have anything to add, Don?
I do. And that is one reason why, you know, Centers for Independent Living should be very close with the landlords or the landlord association. A lot of centers have, like we have a Braille embosser, so we can do that. We can do leases for people. ASL interpretation, that's going to be something that a lot of people just do not end up getting. And that's something that has to be addressed. And even getting accessible apartments is something that is not being done. You know, we always talk about affordable housing. We need affordable, accessible housing. And that is not understood all the time by landlords, but those are rights that the tenants have. So it's just something I get mad at.
Thank you, Don. I want to just add really quick here. So make sure that if you're not from a center, I know we have a lot of center staff on here, but if you're working with somebody that is looking for housing, letting them know the other services that your center may be providing that they may not know of. So if you do have a Braille embosser, if you have a list of interpreters that you often use for your center, hey, you know, if you ever come across this, we can always, you know, give a list that we've used before for other people that might not know how to find an interpreter. And then also, as you get to that piece of what Don was mentioning, that if they don't provide an interpreter, that systems advocacy, individual advocacy service that centers provide, that's where you can start pulling that in too. So just be aware, if you're youth, of all the services that are provided. You may get more than just a youth group or, you know, individual services that you're getting, knowing the whole center. And then the same goes for the staff that may be on this call, of knowing what services are outside of that as well. And I did see a message. I have been emailing people. I guess I will resend out the PowerPoint if you did not receive it today. I guess it didn't attach. So thank you for letting me know, Joanna.
Unmute myself. I should unmute myself. Okay. Next week, we're going to talk much more in depth about accommodation and what's considered a reasonable accommodation, how to request an accommodation from your landlord. So we'll talk about finding accessible housing and how to request those things, and often how to deal with confrontation when requesting accommodation, because landlords are not often very eager to go and make alterations to their units, unfortunately. Okay, so while tenants have certain responsibilities, things that they have to do or should do while they're renting an apartment, there are also things that tenants are not allowed to do while they are renting. One of those would be to intentionally or negligently destroy, deface, or remove any part of the home without permission, right? So you can't go and knock out the wall between the kitchen and the living room because you think it would be more open. You can't destroy or you can't put a mural in the living room, right? Any alteration to that space is going to... you have to discuss that with the landlord. Some leases will allow you to paint in a space if that's something that you want to do. But again, it's going to depend on the specifics of your lease and what your landlord would want. A tenant is not allowed to interfere with the enjoyment of other tenants, right? So this is especially important if you live in a multifamily home or an apartment building where you share walls, floors, ceilings with other neighbors. If you are consistently causing loud noise, if you are loud after quiet hours to the point that other tenants are complaining to the landlord, that can be a significant issue and can at times result in eviction. So it's really important that you are considerate and mindful of the people who you are living around. Make sure that you don't disturb other people, and make sure that everyone has equal enjoyment and access to their space. And finally, tenants cannot unreasonably deny either the owner or any repair staff access to the home. So if the landlord goes about it correctly, if they give you 24 hours notice and tell you that they are going to be there or repair staff is going to be there, you cannot prevent those people from coming in. The landlord has rights to come into their building. They have the right to maintain that space. And even though you are renting it and you do have that right to privacy, you have to let them in because they have followed policy and they've done everything that they are supposed to do. And it looks like we have made it through our slides a little early. So Don, if you would like to have anything to add before we open it up to questions, I'd love to do that.
No, that was good.
Okay.
This is Sierra. I had a quick question. So you've talked a lot about how landlords can't just go in whenever they want. They have to give a notice and things. Even if their notice says I'm going to be there in 24 hours, I know there's a lot of places that do inspections. So if they're looking for bugs, if they're looking for cleanliness and all of those legal, making sure you don't have anything illegal in your apartment and those types of things. What is the line between going through your stuff and they have the right to inspect?
Don, you may have a more intimate understanding of this than I do.
So usually when they do an inspection and they're looking like for bugs or cleanliness or anything, they're not going to go into somebody's drawers, you know, but they will look like behind dressers and under like beds or behind beds, looking either for, you know, dead bugs, mouse droppings, that type of thing. They can also be looking even in a lot of places that bed bugs come out of are the outlets and the both cable outlets and electrical outlets. So
we're fine.
Yeah. So they can go apartment to apartment very quickly. They're not going to be, like rifling through, you know, your underwear drawer, say, or shouldn't. I mean, they would have no reasonable reason or explanation for doing that, because that would still be an invasion of privacy.
Yeah, and so if the inspector is there to look for evidence of bugs, then they will probably look at the carpet, they will look at the furniture, they will look at things that might be on the ground, but they're not going to go in and look at your things. And my understanding is that even if there is a scheduled inspection that's for the landlord to come in and observe cleanliness or even to look for illegal things, make sure that the tenants are complying with all of the policies, the landlord is not able to look through the belongings. They can walk into a room and they can see what is available to see from the room, but they cannot open your closet. They cannot open your drawers and look in at your belongings, because that is not the purview. That's not what they're there for. They're there to maintain the living space. And if the living space looks okay, if it looks like everyone is following policy, then that's not reasonable suspicion warranting a search.
Good okay. question. Thank you. And then I had one more about the last slide here. Say a landlord says, I'm going to come in to repair something on Monday at 2:00 in the afternoon and you have to work and you'd prefer to be there. Can you then say, I'd actually prefer to be here when it's done. Can you move this to another time? Do you have the right to do that as a tenant?
My belief, you can request it, but I don't think that the landlord has to comply. Don, do you have anything?
It's one of those points of reasoning and mediation that you can do with the landlord, because it just makes sure that it depends on the relationship you have with the landlord, but just because you want that, doesn't mean that they would do that.
Yeah, but like Don said, if you're the kind of tenant who pays your rent on time every month, if you report issues when they come up, if you're transparent with your landlord and have this good relationship, they might be a little more willing to work with you on that.
And
but
I see
there are also many landlords who are not particularly invested in the relationship with their tenants at all.
And I see here somebody mentioned they don't always honor it. Some do, as long as it is within reason.
Yeah, so it's really going to depend upon the individual landlord and your relationship with them.
Did anybody else have a question or comment or experience that you wanted to share? So again, if you're on the phone, you can press *6. And if you're on the computer, you have the ability to mute and unmute yourself by going to the bottom left hand of your screen. When you scroll down there, toolbar will pop up and rent you can click on the microphone.
Rent increase. Yes. Thank you, Stevie. So landlords, that's what the lease is for. When you sign the lease, it is saying that these are the rules that are going to be in place from the time you sign it until whatever the end date is written on that lease. So during that time, the landlord cannot increase the rent. They cannot change the rent payment. They cannot add any additional fees. Whatever it says in the lease, that's what you should be paying them. When that lease ends, if you plan to stay in that apartment, if you want to re-engage that lease, then you will have a renegotiation with your landlord. They will draw up a new lease, and they may increase the rent at that time. But any time that a lease is currently valid, whatever the rent is on there, that's what is paid. That's what should be paid. And the only time they can increase the rent is during those renegotiation sessions when in that window in between the leases. And I see there's a note that says, don't sign anything unless you understand it. That's very, very important. Yeah. Even if it looks similar to the last lease, they say, oh yeah, everything's the same, I would still take it home and look it over before you go and sign it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Did we address your question adequately, Stevie? Yeah. So in leases, so increases are common renewal. Yes, it's incredibly common, especially in larger complexes, because real estate is a business. People who own land are trying to get as much money as they can out of it, and the fair market rent increases every year as inflation increases. So it's pretty typical for the rent to increase by $30, $50, $100, maybe $100 every year. And that's why some activists, some housing rights organizers are talking about rent control laws that have existed in many metropolitan areas historically in the United States and just have sort of fallen out of fashion in the past few decades because they don't make as much money for landlords. So that's something that we could talk about when we talk about affordable housing in our fifth session, is rent control and how that affects payments and the average rent that we're all paying. So yeah.
And so I think Stevie had even said serve raises are common at renewal for the cost of living.
Yeah. In general, the cost of living increases every year because the rent goes up, the cost of goods goes up little by little. And so generally, if you have the sort of job that you've had for a long time, typically every year when you have a review, they'll give you a cost of living adjustment. They'll give you a slight increase in your pay. And the goal of that is to help to cushion from those increases in the cost of rent and the cost of other goods.
How it might be different for every location, but when do they have to, if your lease is coming up on June 1st, do they have to notify you in a certain amount of time beforehand that they're going to increase their rent?
I believe it's 30 days.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So 30 days prior to the lease ending, they have to send you a notification saying, hey, your lease is going to end. If you want to sign another lease, this will be the rent. If not, you have to notify us within 2 weeks that you will be out.
Okay. Thank you.
Absolutely. Any other questions? Okay, so next week we are going to be discussing reasonable accommodation and how to make your space work for you. And I think this is one of the most important conversations to have, just because it is a difficult conversation to have. And for many landlords who have not rented to people who need accommodations before, a lot of them are unfamiliar with the process and don't quite realize the extent to which they do have a responsibility to their tenants. So I think it's really important discussion to have, and I hope to see all of you there.
So again, you all will receive a email with the login material, and hopefully this time I'll attach the PowerPoint. Sounds like it didn't get attached this time. So you will see that coming soon with that PowerPoint. And then I know some people are probably wondering what happens if you're a landlord and you do not get along as the tenant. That is coming. So that will be the fourth session. We got to get through reasonable accommodations so we can include that and discussing those management of relationship issues.
Absolutely. So,
yeah.
Can I throw one thing in there real quick?
Sure.
My experience is there are some in my particular area of where I live, is that the apartment complexes tend to give 60 days. I don't know if it's common for all of them, because their reasoning is that gives the tenant 30 days to decide, because they have to give a 30 day notice if they're going to leave. So that gives them the 30 day cushion. So out of courtesy, a lot of them give 60, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that, Stevie.
You're welcome.
I think that's it. If nobody else has any other questions, we can give it another minute. But thank you all for joining us, Don and Dylan, another great information citizen. So thank you.
Great.
Y'all have a good afternoon, and we'll talk to you next Thursday, the 16th.
You as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
How do I log out?